Good afternoon. Welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. Are you or a loved one struggling with a mental health problem? Is anyone in your life dealing with addictions or behavioral challenges? Have you lost a loved one to having problems in your relationship? Do you have a teenager or a young child who is having problems? The reality is that truth is that only... Oh, I have messed up my intro, obviously. Sorry. Today's program is your chance to ask any questions you might have about any topic related to mental health. We're devoting this hour to answering listener questions and emails and hearing listener stories. So please call in or email your questions, and my guest and I will do our best to give you some information and resources that will be helpful to you. Also, if you have a story or an experience you'd like to share with us and our listeners, please don't hesitate to call in. Sharing your story and what worked or did not work might be very helpful to someone listening today who's dealing with a similar issue. Well, sitting in with me today is Anchorage therapist Damon Pemberton, who also happens to be my brother. Damon has graciously agreed to come in on short notice to help me answer your questions today on Line One. Welcome to the show, Damon. Thanks for taking the time to join me.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here. It's been a long time listening to you, and honored to be asked on. So glad to be here.
Well, welcome. And I guess I took care of your anxiety by messing up my intro right off the bat.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I should mark that off.
We're going to have to be careful with our voices, because I know from my answering machine that your voice sounds a lot like mine. So we should probably identify ourselves as Damon and Prentice before we talk.
We'll try to do a good job with that, so listeners don't get confused. Since this is a listener-driven show, I think it's of extra importance that I remind folks how to reach us. You can call us locally at 550-8433. You can reach us toll-free anywhere you might be listening at 1-888-353-5752. And you can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. If you're new to the show or never emailed, you got to spell out line1, L-I-N-E-O-N-E. This is your chance to ask anything on any topic. So if you don't want to listen to Damon and I talk about how many fish we caught on the Copper River this weekend, give us a call and ask us a question on the mental health topic of your choosing. All right, I guess we should probably start off with getting a little bit of background from Damon. Why don't you give us background on what you've done professionally and what qualifies you to sit in here today and give advice on mental health?
Answer questions, yeah. Well, Damon Pemberton, I'm a licensed clinical social worker. Been working in the field about 20 years now, I guess. Done a lot of different stuff. Early on, I was a senior counselor at an outdoor therapeutic program in Warm Springs, Georgia. Really enjoyed that work. Working with kids was kind of a residential therapeutic treatment environment where kids came and stayed about a year, and it was based on the group dynamic, and we did therapeutic trips and backpacking and rock climbing and canoe trips. And so did that for a number of years, then moved up here to Anchorage, went to graduate school, and I was a medical social worker at Providence Hospital for quite a few years. Really enjoyed that work. It was a little short term for, I like kind of working with people a little longer, and felt like it was very useful, very helpful, and gave a lot of resources, but like kind of seeing changes in folks. So I really feel like I found my niche working, doing private practice now, working with individuals, families, couples, do about half teenagers that I see and about half adults, and just really love a little longer term, you know, trying to help people make changes, positive changes in their lives and personal growth. Also have along the way had a couple of therapeutic foster kids that I worked with for a number of years. Prentice, you and I did that together, and saw them through foster care into assisted living when they aged out of the foster care system, and that was very rewarding and fantastic too. So definitely saw some, you know, troubled issues there with aggression and things like that, and was incredibly informative and educational to me experience. So.
All right. Well, I was going to give some background on what I do, but since it's about the same on my past, and we're getting quite a few phone calls already, so we're going to go ahead, and I think we'll just go to the phone lines, and I'll take them in order. So let's start with Francine. You're on line one. Go ahead.
So this is Francine.
Hi there. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Francine.
Thank you. Yeah, thank both of you for being there and having this show. My name is Francine Harbor. I'm wearing two hats today. I'm the executive director of NAMI Anchorage. It stands for the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Mm-hmm. And anyone is welcome to come at no cost to yourself for support, for education, for classes, for support groups. And if you want more information, you can just go to NAMIAnchorage.org. And that's important, but also in my life, what's important is I wanted to share with you the four-legged stool that I've used over the past 25 years to keep me mentally healthy. I won't go into the very severe family, mentally ill family dysfunction in what I grew up in, but leave it to say, I was diagnosed with PTSD in 1988, way back in the day. I'm 60 years old now, and I worked on that very hard, was also diagnosed with depression, worked hard on that, meds, coping skills, understanding. In 2000, I ended up in Providence with a manic attack, mania, so was re-diagnosed as bipolar disorder. Again, worked really hard, but something wasn't quite right, and I did make a suicide attempt. Ended up in Alaska Regional, was discharged, was totally lost, don't have any family here except my young boys, can't lean on them. So I was about to finish the job, in quotes, and all of a sudden I remembered this place called NAMI that a friend had brought me to, and instead of doing what I had planned to do, I walked to the NAMI building, they took me in, and I've been getting healthier and healthier ever since. The first volunteer job they gave me to do was cleaning the toilet, which I did happily. And then I was on disability 7 years later. I worked my way off of disability, and now I'm the executive director of the organization. So that in and of itself is a pretty impressive history of what can happen if somebody gets support. But the bigger story, and then I'll finish, is that I've come to learn, because I speak a lot to groups and I speak a lot to families one-on-one and to people one-on-one, is that the thing that keeps me alive and sane and happy is this four-legged stool I sit on every day. And the four legs are, in no particular order, are my medications, which I, you know, have taken. It's taken a long time to figure them out over the years, but I take them every day. It's my counseling, which I do more or less per month, depending on what I need. It's my support groups. It's my working at NAMI Anchorage and everything, the love and the acceptance and the non-judgmentalism that I get here, and maybe most of all, the opportunity to pay it forward and to help somebody else, because as soon as we help somebody else, it's like giving us a big booster shot of recovery. And then the fourth leg, frankly, is me, that I have a lot of moxie, and I persevered, and I kept going, and I kept going. And I say that not as an immodest thing, but so that we can have empathy for people who don't quite have that strength of will yet. Those are the people we need to help and encourage and be empathetic towards and not call them lazy or having character defects. Some of us have had the blessing of having access to good mental health treatment and to good support. Others of us haven't, and they're not doing well, and those are the people we need to empathize with and support the best we can. And if I can ever help anybody, call NAMI Anchorage, 272-0227, and I'll get off the line.
All right. Thank you very much, Francine. That was a great call and a great summary of the work that you've done and the testament to your resiliency. Damon, you got any comments for Francine?
I would just say, again, to reiterate, congratulations on working so hard to come through that. Sounds like you went through a lot in your life and that you did persevere and overcame those challenges, and that is really fantastic. And now you're doing a lot in the community to help others. And NAMI is a great organization and provides a great service to this community. So I think congratulations on that. And I think you bring up a good point about getting help when you need it. I think that's one of the real dangers and shames of our community and our society, is that we don't always get help, or the people, you know, that we care about can't always get help and or have difficulty doing that. And that is a huge point, that reaching out, having the courage to make that call or to ask someone for help, or, you know, do whatever we need to do, or to help one of our loved ones who we see hurting. Sometimes it's hard to, you know, say something to them and say, hey, can I help out? And I think that's a really good point, is starting that process, getting the ball rolling with getting help is really important, and a great point there. And certainly want to encourage any of our listeners that are going through challenges or experiences to please make that call. Do whatever you need to do, because it's a hard place to be in by yourself, and having someone to support that is very important.
Yeah, thanks, Francine. We're going to keep the ball rolling. I got a couple callers, so I appreciate your patience. Tori, go ahead. You're on line one.
Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I have a teenage boy who has aggression and will become violent when told no. And it's been a long road with this child. We've utilized all the mental health resources available, and now we're looking at residential treatment, and I feel unsure about that, and I guess I'd like to know your opinion of the effectiveness of programs, residential programs, on aggressive and violent behavior in teenagers.
All right. That's a great question. This is Prentice. I'll start with that one and then see what Damon has to add. But yes, if you've done outpatient counseling and you have, you know, utilized the legal system to respond to that aggressive or violent behavior, because violence is never okay in a home, in a family, or anywhere really, frankly. But the residential programs, I think I always counsel parents. I ask them, you know, I point out that there is a risk to treatment and there is a risk to not treat. So you have to really consider those two things. If he is violent, high risk behavior, a danger to himself or others, then it sort of ties your hands if he's unwilling to work with you all, and he's been assessed and been evaluated and nothing really from an outpatient perspective really works, then there's a lot of different options in residential treatment. And one of the things that I encourage parents to do is do your research and your due diligence, because there are a lot of places that just frankly are not very effective or helpful. They are more like, you know, warehousing kids, and there's a lot of places, if you send them to a place that isn't a right fit or specifically for what he needs, then that's going to be not helpful. So do research, talk to folks. If you call a place, ask for referrals of parents, you know, references, because a lot of parents will say they'd be happy to talk to other parents if after their treatment, you know, has gone through, their child has gone through treatment there. So that's where I would start. Now, Damon's got a lot of experience. His treatment program he worked at was adjudicated youth with a lot of history of violence. So I will I'll let Damon go ahead and answer that as well. Go ahead, Damon.
Yeah, thank you. Tori, I just want to empathize with the difficulty of your situation. That is an incredibly hard decision to have to make, to send your child away to residential treatment. So I appreciate the struggles that you're going through with that. It is, yeah, residential treatment, it can be a fantastic, life-altering, amazing experience for kids, and it can be really hard and traumatic for some other kids. So definitely would want to just piggyback on what Prentice said. doing due diligence in choosing a program wisely is important, and doing the education on that, and you know, recognizing that there does come a time if your child is so violent or aggressive that he's a danger to himself or to others in the household, especially with the other children involved, it is important to get the level of care that you need in order to keep him safe and other people safe. We always say the, you know, least restrictive environment that we can, but it sounds like you've been working really hard with the other less restrictive environments, and appreciate the difficulty of your decision. But yeah, the like I said, it can be great, and it can be hard, but choosing a good program would be my best suggestion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks, Tori. Appreciate you calling in.
Thank you.
One more thing I will say about Tori's situation is, from a financial perspective, you really do have to go ahead and check your insurance carrier and what they cover, because these programs can be incredibly expensive. I don't know if you've looked into Alaska Crossings. I like to give out a plug for them. It's a wilderness-based, yep. Damon says yes to a wilderness-based program in Alaska. And you know, that's the place that I refer most of my families to, is the first setting. It certainly doesn't hurt kids to get out and backpack and canoe across open water in some of the most beautiful country in the world. So I would encourage you to look into Alaska Crossings, and then just really, again, do your research. All right, good luck with that. For those of you who might be tuning in late, my guest today is Anchorage therapist Damon Pemberton, who also happens to be my brother and sounds a lot like me, so we're going to try to keep identifying ourselves as well as possible. Today, we are devoting the program to answering your questions about anything related to mental health. So relationships, parenting, addictions, depression, anxiety, or trauma, nothing's off limits, so please don't hesitate to call in. We're also encouraging listeners to call in and share a story about how mental health has impacted your life or the life of someone you love. As always, you can reach us in one of three ways. Our local phone number, 550-8433. You can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752, or email your questions or comments to line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, we're going to keep going with the phone calls. And Shirley, I appreciate your patience. You're on line one. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Shirley Holloway. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm calling for several reasons, but probably the most important one for you to know is that I had a daughter that lived with mental illness for quite some time and subsequently took her own life, which, of course, sent our family into a tailspin. And that's how I found NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, was after the fact. I was looking for a place where people could donate to some organization that serves people that were also living with mental illness. And that was my introduction. And you had Francine Harbor on earlier, and she came to our home along with another person and actually talked with our family about suicide and with her children, and it was just marvelous. I cannot thank them enough. Subsequently, I got on the NAMI Anchorage board, and now I serve on the NAMI Alaska board and the National Alliance on Mental Illness at the national level. And so I'm trying very much to make sure that other families do not endure and live with what we have lived with. And I would say that my major concern are two concerns. One is I'm very concerned about what's happening in healthcare nationally, and the fact that Medicaid is in jeopardy for about 32,000 people here in Alaska. And we're talking about our most vulnerable people, and that's number one. Number two is our journey. We never had anyone who coordinated the care. So we had a provider a GP, general practitioner, who saw her. We had a psychiatrist who saw her. We had therapists who saw her. We had clinicians who saw her. She ended up in emergency. She ended up in API. But there was no one who coordinated it as a case. And that was left to our family to try to figure out all of these drugs and all of these therapies. And we never had one person that could help us with that. And if I could ask for anything in regards to a comprehensive mental health system, it would be that all of the folks that are helping a person who's living with mental illness coordinate those services very carefully. And I think that would make such a difference in the lives of people with mental illness. The other part is that no one ever told us about programs for families. I think now that I know about family to family, and how it changes lives, not only for the family, but the person living with mental illness. You know, I would just reach out and say to people, you know, if you're struggling with a loved one who is living with mental illness, think about taking family to family, because it is a powerful tool. It'll give you tools, it'll give you support, and it'll give you encouragement to carry on with the difficulty of the journey that you're facing. So that's probably enough from me, unless you have a question. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Shirley. This is Damon. Really, really sorry for your loss and going through that experience. That is, you know, death is the hardest thing that we face in life, and suicide is just a supremely, exponentially harder journey to get through. And really sorry for that. I'm glad that you have, you know, chosen to, there's a couple of different ways you can go after an experience like that or loss of a loved one in that way. And sounds like you have really gone the direction of helping others and making a difference. And really appreciate you calling and sharing those resources. Definitely the family to family. And like I said before, the NAMI organization, really fabulous community support. And definitely want to give a plug out to them. It is the care coordination piece that you mentioned is a real challenge for people suffering with mental health issues. And the, you know, you have in the medical field, we do have some care coordinators and things, and sometimes for the severely mentally ill or emotionally disturbed that qualify for services and for Medicaid and thing, there are some programs, assets, and HOPE provides some of those resources to kind of integrate services and help out with all the different pieces in the community, which often are left to the family to support and provide that support. And but for the folks who don't, you know, qualify for that level of service, it is hard to integrate all those pieces. And like I said, often left to the family to pick up those pieces. We definitely face a very difficult time in mental health right now, regardless of how you feel politically. The reality is that healthcare is changing, and there's, a lot more challenges ahead, I think. And, so we will definitely be, living with those in the time to come. Hopefully, you know, our state and community organizers, and we can pick up the slack. I think it's important that we all do our part and chip in, volunteer, help out, use the community resources, create new resources in our communities to fill those gaps that are created from the coverage losses. But yeah, really appreciate your call and point out very good resources there, and give it back to you, Pren.
All right, Shirley, I do have a follow-up question. Your daughter's suicide, obviously a very difficult experience. Can you share with us what helped you get through that, and what was the biggest piece in your support, and what helped you kind of recover from that?
Well, I really believe that getting involved with NAMI and with people who had similar experiences was very helpful. And it's kind of like helping, I think Francine said it well, you know, by helping others, we help ourselves.
Yeah.
And so the grieving process And so I got very involved. Obviously, I got very involved because now I serve on the national board. But I think that that getting involved with others and focusing on our family and our, the health of our family, we pulled together. We're spread out all over the place now, but we have constant communication. The other thing we did is on the, for the first few years, we had our own little memorial on the day that she died, and talked about her and lit candles and shared funny stories and sad stories. Which reminds me, if I might, NAMI Anchorage has a remembrance tree ceremony scheduled for September 9th. It's down on 3rd in Cordova. We have a tree planted there. It'll be at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, where people who have lost a loved one, or you know, a loved one, friend, family, whatever, can come and tie a ribbon on the tree with their name. And this year, we're going to be honored by having the national CEO of NAMI come and be our keynote speaker. So I want to invite families, friends, and come join us. Come remember that person that you love so much.
All right, Shirley, thank you. That's good information. I will I'll add to that. I'm glad you brought up suicide, because next week, it's timely, because next week I have Iris Bolton, which I will plug at the end of my show. She's going to come on. She lost her son in 1977. She's also a therapist and a an expert in suicide, and a survivor, somebody who lost their son. So she's going to join me on recovering after suicide and how families come together. And in her book that I'm reading right now, she says that families have two choices. Either they come together and get stronger and tighter and find meaning and value and celebrate that person, or they fall apart and begin to fight and to get into their own dysfunction. So I appreciate your story and your pain and your recovery from that. So thank you, Shirley.
Thank you.
All right. I guess we're getting pretty close to the end of our or the first half of our show. I do want to take just a couple of seconds to remind listeners that you're listening to Line One. We are answering caller questions and emails today, so you can certainly email any of your questions to lineone@alaskapublic.org, and I will read them on the air and get some. We'll make some comments and have some feedback, and hopefully give you some resources. In addition to that, on the page, on the web page today, which is alaskapublic.org, and you click on the link to radio, it's a radio tab, and then there's a drop down and it says Line One. We have some resources for online kind of resources and places that you can call and go for help. And we've had some mentioned that aren't on there. There's a lot of good organizations in our community. But the other thing that Shirley said that's super important, I think, is finding a group of people that have been through it and what worked for them, and that finding answers in their experience, I think, is really, really important. So we're going to go ahead and take a break here. You want to remind listeners, you're listening to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. We've opened up the phone lines today, and we've had some great calls. So if you have some burning questions or about mental health or emotional wellness, please don't hesitate to give us a call with your questions or comments. We can be reached at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or you can reach us toll-free anywhere you might be listening at 1-888-353-5752. And you can email your questions, as I mentioned before, to line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, Damon and I will be back with more of your calls. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1 on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. For those of you just tuning in, my guest today is Anchorage therapist and my brother, Damon Pemberton. Today we are devoting the hour to answering your questions about anything related to mental health. Relationships, parenting, addictions, depression, anxiety, trauma. Nothing's off limits, so please don't hesitate to call in, and we'll hopefully give you some answers or some point you in a direction of some resources that will be helpful. Also, if you have a story about how mental health has impacted your life or the life of someone you love, please feel free to call in and share that with us. You can email your questions or comments about today's show to line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call us locally at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And please remember that the show repeats tonight at 8 p.m. So if you're listening to this on Monday evening, you'll be hearing a taped recording, and we will not be able to accept phone calls. Okay. Before the break, we had some good calls, and we have a little bit of a break here in the calls, so we'll go ahead and talk about a couple of things. One of the things I wanted to talk about is some of the prevalence problems or the prevalence of mental health problems in the U.S. According to the CDC, an estimated 25% of adults in the U.S. report having a mental illness in the previous year. So that's, if, you know, for those of you who are not great at math, that's one in four, like me, not so great at math. But one in four is a big number, and lifetime prevalence rates for mental illness in the U.S. is about 50%. So we don't really talk about that too much because there's a stigma associated in that, and we want to get to talking a little bit about the stigma associated with mental health, because if more people talked about their own experiences, you would realize that it is a commonality that is shared by many of your peers and friends and coworkers, and something that you know, people should not be ashamed to discuss and talk about with people they care about. So that's just a little sidebar, and we can get back to more of that if we have some time later. But right now we have a few more callers calling in, so we're going to go ahead and put Jamie on the air. Go ahead, you're on line one. Jamie, you there?
Hi. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, hi. My name is Jamie. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Jamie?
Good. So I was calling in because I guess it was I was raised in the foster system for, I don't know, 10 years or so, and then I was eventually adopted. And as a child, I didn't know anything about it, but my mother portrayed my adopted mother. She just, like, used her. She always wanted something wrong with her kids, I guess, like whether it be an illness or diagnosing us with mental health issues that we may or may not have had. And at the time, I thought it was because of money, because she'd get a substantial amount of money. But now as an adult, I feel that she wants all the kids that are doing bad, because I had 14 brothers and sisters. And so she wanted the kids that were doing bad, she allows them back in their house, but any of the children that aren't doing so good or that are doing good for themselves are, like, the enemy. I'm one of those. I guess it's been, I don't know if it's been diagnosed to her, but she doesn't see it as an issue. She doesn't talk to me anymore, but one of my therapists said it might have been a Munchausen syndrome. And I guess now I kind of struggle with relationship issues with people in general because of always being told I wasn't good enough. And I got my bachelor's degree recently and it didn't really do anything. I thought it would make me feel somewhat better, but not really. And I'm still always trying to prove something, but I don't really have anyone to prove, I guess. And a lot of my family and friends have had, mental health issues. I have a brother who used drugs. All my brothers and sisters, most of them did drugs or are in and out of jail. Yeah, and my adopted mom wants to continue relations with them. But for me, I've never been into drugs. And I was in the military for a while and I got my degrees and thought I was doing good. And she wants nothing to do with me. And I'm like the worst thing. So I just don't know how. I guess how to deal with stuff like that. With Munchausen's or relationships or stuff in general.
Well, Jamie, this is Prentice, and I really appreciate your call. If you'll just stay on the air, we may have a couple of questions for you. But that is the Munchausen's. By proxy or is a very difficult and complex thing. And it sounds like, you know, if we don't really use that term necessarily, it does sound like the adults in your life were very, they needed to be needed and they needed to feel important. And they did that by having sick kids, by keeping their children, needing them and by drawing attention to themselves. So it is really complex. But the one thing I tell my clients who have dealt with this type of stuff in the past is that, and it's never about the child. This is their stuff. And I absolutely would encourage you, if you haven't already, to find a really good therapist or a support group for people who grow up in those sorts of homes and spend some time talking about that, because it definitely impacts trust, your ability to read emotions and to know, you know, what's right or what's not right. Did you do something to upset somebody? Did you do something wrong? Because in the mind of a child, it's hard to understand all those nuances and figure out why this is happening to you. So it definitely takes a toll for sure. And I know it sounds like it's had some lasting impacts, which is what childhood trauma does. Many adults who deal with childhood trauma and that sort of, sometimes it's insidious. That's, you know, it's not trauma in the sense that you're getting beaten or anything like that, but the emotional trauma and the emotional toll that takes on your ability to trust and to be able to read people and understand the nuances of relationships sounds like it's taken a toll on you and the rest of your siblings.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Damon, you have something to add?
Yeah, I guess my first comment would be, unfortunately, good for you for not needing to be in that household, you know, for getting your life together and moving forwards and having success and having accomplishments. And I understand completely the difficulty of, and it's not right, you deserve attention and affirmation for your progress. But I guess, you know, better to be the child that is getting on with their lives and having success instead of needing the attention and, you know, hey, you know what I'm saying, Jamie? Like,
yeah,
you're making positive steps and keep heading that direction. Friend's right that, you know, oftentimes triangulation and family dynamics, parents feel, you know, sometimes that they, whether to not even put a label on it, sometimes they need their children to need them. And it sounds like that's what your adopted mother, she really needs to be needed and wants to be, probably coming from a place of loving and caring, wants to be helpful and provide that support, but it's kind of losing the opposite end of that, of as people get better, supporting that and helping them to continue to grow and to find their independence. And wants to hold on to her kids and continue to care for them. But it is a natural course that we grow up and we move on and find our own lives and our own meaning. And that sounds like the piece of where you're at and the issues that you're struggling with. How could you not have issues with relationships and things coming from that type of environment and the things that you've been through? I mean, knowing that, I think that's a really important piece, is knowing that you've had challenges in your life and now you're at a point where you're moving forwards and ready to explore some new types of relationships and healthy relationships. And I think working with your therapist, I think you did say you have a therapist, and working with them to recognize, you know, the healthy relationships and maybe healthy boundaries with mom. If she is unable to support you getting better, then, you know, need to be able to move forwards in your life. And
This is Prentice. Jamie, boundaries, Damon brings up a really good point. Boundaries are super important, and they're really, really hard for people who come from families without any. How do you develop those, and how do you know what they are? So you sound like a fairly young person. Would that be accurate? I don't want to ask you exactly how old you are, but are you fairly young?
I'm 26.
Yes, that
tomorrow
qualifies.
Actually,
that qualifies as really young. Brain development doesn't even get completed until we're about 26. So your brain is just now coming into its full capacity, and you know, this is coming from a 50-year-old. So you know, that seems young to me. And you've got a lot of time left to sort of figure this stuff out. Damon, looks like you have another.
Yeah, the other piece is, you know, sometimes when our family members and other people are not able to meet our emotional needs or the pieces that we need, it's important for us to be able to meet those ourselves. And so I would really encourage you to keep doing the things that help you feel good, using your coping strategies, developing healthy coping and, you know, exercise and positive thinking and doing those things, creating new relationships, healthy relationships, friendships that help you meet the emotional needs that you need to be healthy and to continue to move forwards. And you know, you can still maintain a relationship with your adoptive mom, but maybe not depending on her for helping you continue to move forward. That being maintaining that relationship, but also developing the new systems to meet your own emotional needs and taking care of yourself today, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for the call, Jamie. And I will add that you can't get orange juice out of a turnip. So you're not going to get the stuff that maybe you need from your mom, but as Damon said, you can get it from somewhere else.
Okay. Well, thank you. You guys have a good day.
Thanks. You too. All right. We'll keep going with the phone calls. Gene, you're on line one. Go ahead. Gene, are you there? Sounds like somebody's there, but perhaps he's been on hold for too long.
Did you say Gene or Dean?
Oh, I said Gene. It's not a he. Sorry, I have a friend named Gene who's a male. So
that's all right. No, it's D.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No problem. So my question is, I'm mentoring a foster youth currently. She's 16, and she's had sexual trauma in her background, and she's, you know, really struggling through the system right now, and it's a very complicated situation, obviously, but my biggest struggle with her is that I really, really have been trying to encourage her to get into counseling, but she's, you know, because she's in the system and it's complicated, so it's not happening as quickly as I'd like to see. And I, so me as her mentor and someone who's close to her and a consistent presence in her life, I'm curious if you guys have some suggestions on like topics that we can talk about that aren't that might be able to help her process some of this, and or activities or anything like that to maybe be that stopgap while I'm trying to get her into counseling or getting somebody to help her to get into counseling and, you know, moving forward with that.
That's a great question. Is she, a lot of kids in the foster system are on Medicaid. Is she on Medicaid?
That's a really good question. I'm assuming. I mean, my understanding is that it's all part of her package being in OCS right now, that, you know, Medicaid or
yes,
just general health care is included and counseling is included and that kind of thing, which is why I've been really trying to encourage everybody to, like, move forward with that. But she has a caseworker that's, as they all are, overworked and
yeah,
kind of under attentive and, you know, it's just, it's tough, right? The foster family's there and they're better, like she's got a new one, new set of family that is better than the old one, but they still have their own drama. And
yeah, anyway, that's,
so I'm kind of hitting, you know, I'm hitting the wall a lot of places where the formal structure sits.
Yeah, I will say that I appreciate what you're doing and trying to get involved. And one of the biggest problems we have right now in our state is that Medicaid, the waiting list for to get these kids, and as somebody mentioned, a caller mentioned earlier, that the most, the ones who need it the most are the ones who cannot and do not have access to it. And the waiting list is astronomical. It's months and months and months for young people to get into counseling. And then, you know, they have some limited options as far as who they get for counseling. And as we all know, that in counseling, one of the most important pieces is the relationship that you have with your counselor. And having a counselor who is really, really trained and at connecting with traumatized young people who are very, very resistant to counseling is critical. And a lot of times you don't get that when you just have to take the first available. So something that somebody said really, it was really smart, and it said it to me a long time ago when I was working with really difficult kids, is that it's not as important that they know what you know as it is that they know you. And
right.
So as far as being a consistent person in this child's life and just her knowing that that you're there and that you support and that you listen and that you spend time with, that connection is so important to mental health. And these kids are often, you know, ones that move from foster home to foster home and from family to family and have been traumatized as youth. They have attachment issues and they don't trust people. And so for you to just keep showing up and keep your presence is really, really important. Her knowing that there's an adult that she can count on as somebody who cares and will be there consistently is probably the number one thing. It's not so much what you talk about, it's just being present. And I think that's really, really important. Damon, you have anything to add?
Yeah, just I agree that it's really great that you're doing that. And you're right, friend, that, you know, being present, we talk about kids and development and how to create attachment and relationships and mental health, wellness, well-being. We need some quality relationships in our lives, and a lot of kids that go through the system and are having those challenges and don't have those adults in their life to provide that meaningful relationship or positive relationship. They don't, you know, our lives, relationships don't have to be perfect, but we need enough, just enough, in order to recognize that that's a possibility. And a lot of times when the family, when kids aren't getting that from the family, just having one adult in their life that is a positive role model and have a positive relationship with can be enough to help them move forward. And later on, you know, even if that isn't happening right now, if she's being having difficulties right now, kind of maybe what some of you're doing is setting the seeds, you know, planting the seeds for that growth and those opportunities in the future. And I think it's really great that you're doing that. And it is hard to get resources in mental health. I think keeping the discussion open with her and talking about, like, the, you know, some of the stigma of mental health. I have clients that come to me all the time, like, this is my first time and I'm not really sure how this works, but I'm not really mentally ill, you know, so, and that's, you know, explaining to her that that's not what therapy is all about. That is just a safe place to go and talk about things, you know, and get some different perspectives. And it's not rocket science, it's not brain surgery, it's just someone to help out and bounce ideas, and someone who doesn't, not invested in whether or not you're doing well. You know, we talk to family and friends, you can only say so much sometimes because they want you to be okay or they have some sort of expectation out of you, whereas a therapist, you can be whoever you want, you can say whatever you want, and they're not going to judge you, and they're just going to explore stuff with you and look at things and try to make positive changes. And, you know, so maybe talking to her a little differently about not getting help, but just going to talk to someone that might be helpful.
Mm-hmm. The wisest.
Yeah, well, and I have. I mean, we have had conversations, and she's had a few things happen where she recognizes that she could use the help.
Yeah.
So it's not that she's resistant to it per se. It's more, it's just the system, you know?
Yeah, it's painful. It is a difficult system to navigate.
Yeah. And part of that is that, I mean, practitioners are limited too by what we can provide, because according to law, and there's some people working on that right now, because Alaska, just like everything, is very different than a lot of the lower 48. And in order to be a Medicaid provider, you have to have a psychiatrist, a medical doctor in your office in order to oversee and provide services, mental health services, to Medicaid providers. So, you know, we don't have, in my office, Fuller Diagnostics, we have neuropsychologists there, but we don't have a medical doctor psychiatrist. And so my hands are tied from mental health perspective. We can't see Medicaid. And that breaks my heart, because I've always been invested in, and when I worked at my previous agency, we did, and I could do that. And I made sure that that was at least a significant portion of my practice, because I think it's our ethical responsibility as counselors to provide those services.
That's a good point that you bring up, Damon, because we as providers, I'm in the same boat. I have a clinic, Counseling Solutions, and I have 9 therapists there and nurse practitioners who would be willing to see Medicaid clients, but we can't because of that provision that you have to have a psychiatrist, whether a psychiatrist is actively seeing the child or not. And I think it's something that needs to be changed in order to really get these young people and the chronically mentally ill the help that they need and they deserve. So,
and I think they are working on that. There's some pieces, people trying to make exceptions to the Medicaid standards in Alaska because we have limited, you know, psychiatrists, certainly for teenagers. But they're trying to make exceptions where clinics can see them without a psychiatrist being on board, or counseling, you know, working in tandem with a psychiatrist that's outside of the facility, so that we can meet the needs of Medicaid kids and adults.
Yeah. All right. I appreciate the call. It's a really good call. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right.
Okay, I think we have time to get one more call in. Chris, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'll try to be brief because I'd like to hear the response. I'm 59 years old, just turned 59. At age 57, I started having seizures. I was eventually diagnosed by the Mayo Clinic as having epilepsy. And they eventually located a spot in the left side of my brain where I was apparently born with something that was wrong. They eventually removed that portion of my brain and cured the epilepsy. And I thought I'd go from a person having 1 to 5 seizures a day to a person who is ecstatically happy
right. mm-hmm.
from getting rid of the seizures, and instead I've become depressed, and I cannot, for the life of me, figure out why I've become depressed instead of becoming ecstatic. And I'm just wondering why that might be.
Mm-hmm. Are you, Chris, are you seeing a psychologist or a therapist currently?
I've just made an appointment for that. I just couldn't figure out why that wouldn't have been. I figured I'd get out of the Mayo Clinic, and I'd just be bouncing around.
Right.
I can't figure out why that wouldn't be, and I just wondered if you had any thoughts as to why that wouldn't be.
Well, Chris, that's a complicated and question, obviously, and requires, I think, you know, a meeting. I'm sure you have a neurologist that you are working with. But brain surgery, you said you had part of your brain cut out?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. The brain is really, really complex, and it could be that there's something as a result from the surgery that has impacted the, you know, the chemistry of your brain. And I'm not a neurologist, so you would definitely want to get evaluated by a neurologist and perhaps a neuropsych consult with a neuropsychologist would be a good investment. But mm-hmm. I think you're doing the right thing by getting with a therapist who can help you kind of figure out. I mean, it's a big life change, and hopefully one for the better, like you thought, and maybe the expectation that you had of just like, okay, now I got rid of this, now everything's going to be better. And your life is still your life, and I don't know what's in it. But yeah, talking to a therapist about all of those things would be really helpful. But I think getting a comprehensive assessment and then moving forward and one day at a time and making good choices and living a healthy lifestyle obviously are very, very important. So I know that's a weak answer, it feels like, but there are answers out there, and I think getting involved with some folks on a consistent basis over time would be helpful.
Yeah. You said that was like about 2 years ago that you had your surgery, Chris?
No, the surgery was just January, actually. The seizures started about 2 years ago.
Gotcha.
And Mayo found the actual location.
Yeah,
and said, well, we found it, and it was actually oddly enough, was a birth defect that didn't start affecting me till age 57.
Yeah, I've heard of that before. Actually, I had a client that went through a similar thing down on the it was the base of her soul. But anyway, yeah, I think a really important piece for you moving forward is don't judge yourself too hardly, you know, too harshly, like. Yes.
Damon, I'm going to have to cut you off because they're going to cut us off. Chris, can you leave your number? I appreciate it. And then we'll get back with you and talk a little more. Thanks for coming on, Damon. I appreciate you taking the time to join me.
Thanks for having me.
All right. As I mentioned earlier, on next week's program, I'm pleased to welcome Atlanta-based therapist Iris Bolton, who also lost a child to suicide in the 70s. And she will join me for a discussion about how to heal after losing a loved one to suicide and grief in general. So that's next Monday, July 31st at 2 p.m., repeating the same evening at 8 p.m. Eric Bork is our web editor and audio engineer for today's show. Thanks for taking the time to join us today on Line One. Until next time, I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.